Greetings of Christian love this morning. Glad to be with you here. Also want to extend a welcome to the visitors that are among us this morning. May God bless you richly. Trust that this service might be an encouragement and blessing to you all. And also, it's a blessing to see brethren and sisters that regularly attend here and are faithful supporters week by week. And I just trust that we never, ever, ever take for granted the wonderful privilege we have in meeting in the house of God. And studying the Word together and sharing with one another. Somebody said about another denomination playing group, they said they don't come to church, they come to church for after church. They don't come to church, they come to church for after church. And sometimes I think about that, but it's part of it, isn't it? It's fellowship and talking together and seeing how it's going, all of that. That's all part of church life, I believe. It's part of what God wants us to do. Getting into our sermon this morning, the Bible in 2 Timothy chapter 3 teaches us that in the last days, perilous times shall come. We are definitely living in last days, and it is no doubt to anyone that times are perilous. One of the characteristics of our generation that is stated in that passage is that they shall be without natural affection. Now, the whole list of things in that passage there, first couple verses of 2 Timothy 3, are a list of characteristics of men living in the last days. But one that especially sticks out to me is the fact that they're without natural affection. Now, whenever you're driving home from work or driving anywhere approximately 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock at this time of the afternoon, throughout these days, about this time of the year, maybe up towards 7, if somebody's out walking along the road, and they aren't just out for an evening exercise, what is walking beside them? Two or three children or a pet? Huh? Have any of you observed that lately? In the last couple years? In the last 10 possibly? I don't know. I haven't lived in Pennsylvania that long. But I am amazed again and again how many ladies, men, couples are out walking their pet. It's quite something. A dog, mostly dogs, but anyway, they're out walking with their pet. Not families. How many pet-oriented places surround our countryside and cities? Daycare for pets and so on, without natural affection. Without natural affection, it's a sign of the times. You don't read the news for an entire week, just reading headlines, without seeing some atrocity that has occurred with a mother or a father with a children that God has given to them. Either to their own children, stepchildren, or some other child. Or babies. Gross things. Serious evil things. Crimes committed against children and babies. The Bible says that people will be without natural affection. That's exactly what it means. How many abortions are committed in a week's time, in a year's time, in a decade? How much of that goes on? But I guess this morning to me, one of the concerns that carries in my heart, and what is today, by the way? It's Mother's Day, right? One of the concerns that I carry in my heart is that approximately 25 years ago, there was a large assembly of ministers from a larger segment of the conservative churches. They were gathered about 25 years ago in a place not terribly far from here, and a lot of you know where it's at. And one of the major concerns that was dialogued in that minister's meeting on a larger segment of the conservative church was, what are we going to do about the abortions that are taking place among so-called Mennonite conservative people? I talked with a bishop a couple months ago. If I was to say his name, you would all know very well who I'm speaking of. He's a well-known brother. He said, Virgil, he said, I'm very concerned about the sin of abortion in our conservative churches. I talked with another bishop who told me some things that happened even in his understanding and his history. Brothers and sisters, we can point our fingers at all them people out there that are doing it. But what about us as God's people? What is our attitude toward the family that now has more than 5 or 6 children? What is the general feeling that we have amongst our young people? Young couples, whenever that number goes to a certain point, okay. In such a hostile world, God's people need to exist and progress as God gives life in the direction we need for the challenges that come to us day by day and year by year. God's people need to exist in a hostile culture. A culture that is anti-God and anti-family. And we need, as God's people, to exist and shed forth the gospel light from now until the end of time, or as long as God gives us life and opportunity to be here. Reflecting on a sermon title, A Message from God for Mothers This Mother's Day, I feel led to speak this morning on godly mothers in perilous times. That's the title. Godly mothers in perilous times. Now, I realize that we have mothers sitting here. We have grandmas sitting here. And I think that not only our mothers need to carry this torch and pass on these principles of Bible teaching, but our grandmothers need to have an active and proactive role in perpetuating the faith. Not only that, but with the number of young ladies among us, we have a lot of potential mothers. Give it 10 years. How many of you young ladies will be mothers? And what kind of ideals do you have as you look down the road? Potentially, I say, because not all women come to marriage and not all women can have children of their own. My heart is touched this week because a dear couple who we know very well had the privilege of taking care of a needy child from birth to 2 years of age. And this week, Wednesday, they had to give her back to her mom. The heartrending feelings that go through a mother's heart when she is invested and invested and invested in a foster child only to turn it back to where it came from. Sad day. That is, are we touched by those things? Does that even matter to us as God's people this morning? And who is responsible for all those children? My mind went back to the story of Moses and what his parents faced in their generation and how their times may have been somewhat like our own, at least in some measure. Thinking and meditating on their example, I believe there are some lessons that we can learn from them. More specifically, we'd like to focus on the mother of Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Her name was Jochebed. I'm probably not going to use her name very much, but that is the story I'm focusing on. Now let's think a little bit. We're going to soon go in and read the story. But Moses was a baby, and he was out there among those bulrushes in a basket. And the Bible tells us very clearly how old Aaron was in relation to Moses. Does anyone have an idea how much older Aaron was than Moses? If you study it out a little bit, you would find out when Moses was 80 years old, Aaron was 83. So we know that Aaron was 3 years older than Moses was. And there was a young girl watching the little basket there in the bulrushes along the river. And she was at least old enough to be able to speak sensibly to Pharaoh's daughter when Pharaoh's daughter came there, able to run back to the house and tell Mama what was happening down there. So we could guess that she was at least 5 or 6. That, to me, is interesting, studying those type of things. So we're going to look at that family just a wee tiny bit this morning, the culture in which they lived, and see if we can learn some lessons from that. Without further comment, I'd like to read some of the Bible story. I'm not going to make a lot of comments about the reading, but I'd just like us to get a picture and see if there's any similarity between what we read here in these verses and what happens in 2016 in our world today. And I'm not only speaking about United States, I'm also speaking about what happens across the world. In countries like China, where the one-child rule has gone on for years and years already, and they're trying to undo that. Because what tends to happen is, if you can only can have one child, then for many years, they've only wanted to have boys. And well, if you only have boys, that's what the parents are strongly preferring, at least in some places, because of the one-child rule. And then, if you only have boys, what happens to there's no propagation of the human race. And I guess some people come bright enough to understand that after a while. It's amazing how when people defy and go against God's ways, what kind of problems they get themselves into. Let's just see if there's any similarity between our world today and the culture we live in to this time. I invite you now to Exodus chapter 1, verse 15. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of the one was Shiphrah, and the name of the other Puah. And he said, when you do the office of a midwife to them, women, and see them upon the stools, if it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not, as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. And the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said unto them, why have ye done this thing and have saved the men children alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as Egyptian women, for they are lively, and they are delivered ere the midwives come in unto them. Therefore, God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. And then it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them houses. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. And there went a man of the house of Levi, and took a wife, a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived, and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes, and daubed it with slime, with pitch, and put the child therein. And she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him, and said, this is one of the Hebrews' children. Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee? And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses, and she said, because I drew him out of the water. I'd like to read a little commentary on this story in the book of Acts, chapter 7, when the deacon Stephen was giving a sermon to a group of people who knew Israel's history, and he's pulling a strong lesson from the life of Moses. And so he gives a little bit of a background. And as he is speaking about this story, he uses some words here recounting a bit of the story, and we're just going to read what he says. Acts chapter 7, verse 17. Acts 7:17, but when the time of the promise drew nigh, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose which knew not Joseph. The same dealt subtly with our kindred, and evil entreated our fathers, so that they cast out their young children to the end that they might not live. In which time Moses was born, was exceeding fair, and nourished up in his father's house for 3 months. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. Now I want to read Hebrews 11. Verse 23. Hebrews 11:23, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child. And they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Maybe I'll read 27 yet. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured his seeing as him who is invisible. I'd just like us to notice, before we go further in this sermon this morning, I'd like us to notice just a couple things out of the passage that we just read here in Hebrews 11. You notice it has a kind of an interesting twist on words here, but it says, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents. Now, the fact that he was born and he was hid by his parents wasn't necessarily the faith of Moses, was it? It was the faith of Amram and Jochebed. It was the faith of a godly mother, I believe, with her husband, who decided to, in spite of the commandment of the king, decided to go against the commandment of the king because they needed to obey God rather than men. And we see here, we could almost read it, by faith, the parents of Moses, when they saw he was a proper child, were not afraid of the king's commandment. And somehow that faith instilled that move against the culture and against the world in which they lived and against what maybe other Israelite families were doing, stood as a legacy to their credit. And it's recorded in the faith chapter here. They weren't afraid of the king's commandment. It would have been interesting for all of you to have heard the last sermon at our Central America missionary meeting. Pablo Yoder preached in Spanish, of course, but he preached on verse 26. And he evidently studied into the culture that Moses grew up in. And he described how Moses, for some reason, day by day, throughout his years growing up in Pharaoh's house, and in the best of education, as we read about in Acts chapter 7, and all of that that he was trained in, and instructed in how he, it's for some reason, the faith and love for God, faith of his parents and his love for God still remained alive. And I don't know where he got all his imagination, but he gave a few things as if he would studied into it, and probably through Josephus, if nowhere else. He went and showed us how that sometimes Moses would go out in his fine chariot and he would overlook that valley of Goshen, the area of Goshen where those people lived, and realize that out there are my people. I'm in another setting. I'm in another environment. And he, with all his finery and his wealth that he was heir to, would stand out there and look over that whole thing out there. Those are those people. And I am one of those people. And he also gave us the idea that he imagines that once in a while, Moses might have just taken a little time and quietly sneaked down there to where his mom and dad lived and just sat down with mom and dad a little while. I know that might be imagination and it might be supposition, but for some reason, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. For some reason, he chose what he chose. And I have a feeling it was because he had a godly mother and father who chose to stand for Christ, stand for God in perilous times. Just a couple of observations about the story that we've read in these three different passages of Scripture, and just want to make some parallels to our times. Number one, the king's commandment that we read about there was not in favor of godly families or having children. The king's commandment was not in favor of godly families or having children. And so the king used his legislative authority to annihilate children, especially boys. He didn't care about the girls as much, but he was concerned about having too many boys. A little opposite of what the problem they have had in China. A little bit opposite there. More could be said about the issues that occur in some of these other countries. But what about America? And what about the Church of God? Some of these things that I'm preaching about this morning are dear to me. And they're real to me. And I just trust that somehow we would develop convictions about some of these subjects. I believe we have them here, but we got to keep them alive, and somehow we need to preach about some of these things, especially as young couples come up among us and develop their own homes under the direction and blessing of God. I've already mentioned over here the possible potential young mothers who may someday be among us in a few years, whether they serve, live for God here or some other place, but also what about young men? These teachings are for us all, I believe. But the king's command was not in favor of godly families, nor in favor of having children. Number two, the king's commandment was in favor of, in fact, killing children to prevent population growth. He was in favor of that. He didn't care. Just whip them children out of there and into the river. If you didn't catch them whenever they were first born, throw them into the river. Is there any similarities between that and our generation? Does it matter to anybody if abortion continues? Does it matter to anybody? In our world, in society, does it matter if children are killed? But but in Moses' generation and times preceding his birth, there was a lot of people that were bowing graciously to the king's commandment. Yes, sir, we will do as you say. But how is it in our world today? Is our government in favor of godly families? Is our government in favor of just allowing God to have his way in those areas of life? Number three, the people of God were targeted and under scrutiny. Just heard this week something challenging. Most of you people here, at least in the men's side of the house, get a little tax form once in a while and you have to send in. A good part of your taxes go to support the public school system. I think you all know that, don't you? And then why in the world do you have to pay for your school tuition on top of that yet? A lot of your balance of your taxes goes to support the public school system and pay taxes to the government, and that's part of our job. Don't get me wrong. It's part of our job to pay our taxes. But then if you have a Christian day school, you've got to pay for that too. That's an interesting paradox, isn't it? And I know that in the United States we've been blessed in many ways for the last 200 years possibly. But I've already in past sermons left us to understand, like in World War I, the idea of being a conscientious objector to war targeted the people who would not go to war. And men die because they refuse to go to war. And throughout the generations, there have been some concessions made. But by and large, the world in which we live in targets the people of God and puts them under scrutiny. There's many stories that could be told to prove that. It was that way back in Moses' time and his parents' time, and it's that way today. And if we just follow it just a bit further, according to the rule that was that all the boys should be thrown either alive into the river or killed at birth, we know very well when there are only girls allowed and no boys, potentially there will be an extinction of the people. And that is the overall goal that Pharaoh had in his time. He wanted that nationality. He wanted that group of people to stop. But for some amazing reason, God was a little more smart and a little bit ahead of Pharaoh. And God had some things in place. Not everybody bowed to the king's commandment. Not everybody did what Pharaoh wanted. Praise God. And the people somehow succeeded and pulled ahead. Another observation from this generation, in this historic time that has a parallel in our generation. The society was geared so that the male workforce was extremely busy and probably had little leisure family time, if any, at all. It says that he made them serve with rigor from day to day, sun up to sun down. And if you study into what all those slave masters were like, it was nothing pleasant whatsoever. And it got worse whenever God sent Moses back there to deliver his people. And for a short period of time, that thing intensified. And we don't have any indication that during those 40 years that Moses was over there in the wilderness, that anything got better. It probably got worse on some of these very points we're talking about. And the men had to go and go and go and go, work, 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 because the king said so. And the slave masters were driving and making them out, stay at it and stay on it and be there and do it and do it and do it. Let me ask you a question. to keep gas in your car, mortgage payments up, taxes? Is it any different today? How many of you married men here just sit back and take it easy for about 2 or 3 weeks? Just, you know, no, it's not that way. At least not that way at my house. You get up and you go and you go. And if you don't, the bills will stack up, the credit card will stack up, all that type of stuff. And if there's any unexpected issues that come along, it only makes it worse, right? The society we live in today is geared so that the men got to keep their nose busy. Really busy. And sometimes leisure family time is just not there like it could be or should be. But sometimes men of God say, you know, we need to have some time. There was a very, very busy man, and if I was to say his name, I don't think there's a person sitting here 10 years and older that wouldn't know his name. He was a busy church man. He had meetings and responsibilities and preaching assignments far and wide, and was very, very, very well known. He doesn't live anymore. But he made it clear to anyone that one night per week is family night. And in that, my young people plan nothing. I plan nothing, unless it was a week of meetings abroad, then yes. But one night a week was family night. And his children loved family night. They did. Because it was one of the ways that he decided in the generation I live in, with all the stress and struggle of life, this is a night for the family. That's at least an idea for us. I know a little bit about how the society we live in is geared so that the male workforce is extremely busy, just like it must have been in the times that Moses lived. Number 5, Amram and Jochebed. Jochebed and Amram, I'm trying to keep the emphasis on the mothers, loved their 3 precious children in spite of any anti-family and hostile culture that they lived in. In spite of that culture, they lived and loved their children. We don't read about any more children that they had but Miriam, Aaron, and Moses. But they loved their precious children in spite of a very anti-family and hostile culture that they lived in. Do you love your children today? Will you love your children if you become a parent in the next 15 or 20 years? Will you? In spite of the world we live in? Number 6. Not everybody was bad. It's another lesson I learned from here. These midwives were God-fearing ladies. I don't know what their nationality was. It gives a hint they might have been Hebrews, but that doesn't say that they didn't agree with the king. But for some reason, they feared God. And they might have been scared of the king, and it seems like they made some excuses. I don't know what all, but they decided to not go along with the royal decree. Evidently, for some strange reason, Pharaoh's daughter didn't agree with her dad. Because she could have just as easily flipped that boat over and winged that boy out there so the crocs could get him. But she, for some strange reason, as she opens up this little basket and finds a little crying baby boy in there, decides, you know what? This fellow's going home with me, if at all possible. So she wasn't totally bad. And who knows? We don't know the story. Who knows if she wasn't one of the Egyptian people who one day walked out of that place? We don't know. The Bible doesn't say, to my knowledge. But it does say that many Egyptian people went with the children of Israel when they fled that land. How can we ever know who all that might have been? People who saw a people that was different and stood for truth and decided we put our lot in life along with them. Is that a challenge and a possibility for us today, that somebody that you associate with, somebody that you work with, somebody that you know would take a stand? I want to be like Sister so-and-so. I want to be like Brother so-and-so. I appreciate his testimony. He's a godly person. She is a woman of God. She answers my questions when she comes through this checkout line. I'd like to be like her. Not everybody in society is all keyed up and excited about the latest fashions and fads. There's somebody out there that is looking for light. Will they find that light in you? Like the midwives did, like Pharaoh's daughter did. Now, a few lessons for us today. Focusing on mothers, fathers can listen to. Focusing on grandmothers, even if you please. Focusing on mothers to be, if such exist among us. Number one, godly mothers and fathers. Godly mothers will find a way to obey and honor God in every generation, regardless of the king's commandment. Godly mothers will find a way to obey and honor God in every generation, regardless of the king's commandment. Some of the most heartrending things that happened in Anabaptist history were whenever a young mother, and some of them went expecting into prison and needed to deliver in prison. And mothers well know what happens after a baby's born, in whether it's in prison or otherwise. And the way God has meant for babies to be taken care of. And one of the most heartrending things must have been for those mothers to give their babies over to ungodly, evil men and women who were persecuting them for their faith in God. That kind of stuff has happened in history. It's heartrending. Let's just remember that vengeance belongs to God and he repays if those people did not repent of what they did. But somehow people did not, and even in those times, they listened to God and did his will, regardless of the king's commandment. There's a lot more that could be said there, but the clock is rolling along. I'd like to go to another point. Parents, number two, parents are still responsible to do all that they can to raise a godly family in spite of what society and culture may think or do. Parents are still responsible to do all that they can to raise a godly family in spite of what society and culture may think or do, or however it changes. Is there anything we can do to safeguard our families? Is there anything that mothers can do to teach the rising generation in things that counter our society and our culture, but promote the ways of godliness and holiness? I trust that we take that seriously this morning. Number three. In our day, godly mothers need to be faithful in Bible practice, firm and steadfast in faith, and loving in the discipline of godly family life, especially when daddy is busy working. It is a great blessing whenever a four-year-old finds out that what mom says is the same as what dad says. It's a blessing when a 16-year-old finds out that whatever mom says is the same as what dad says. It's a sad day in home life whenever they find out this question here. I'll ask dad because he'll give me more room. This question over here, I'll ask mom. And I think children don't know that, if one will give a better answer than the other. But it's easy for me to get busy with all kinds of things and sometimes those details of day-by-day home life we tend to forget, like it happens at my house. But when a mother is faithful in Bible practice, firm and steadfast in faith, and loving in the discipline of godly family life, even when the schedule is busy and we are not able to do everything we should be doing possibly as fathers. You know, a lot of teaching is given when you're at work, when you're out in the chicken house or in the barn or in the shop. A lot of teaching is being done. I think about how mothers work with their adolescent daughters and their adolescent sons coming home from school. Some of those outbursts of school ups and downs, mom gets to hear a good bit about that before dad ever hears about it. Maybe the bigger, higher points, maybe dad finds out about, but mom's fueled a lot of that stuff about 3:30 in the afternoon. Truth be told, that's the way it is. And the instruction that goes out in those moments, the teaching, the character building that goes out in those times counts and counts and counts. Let's never forget it. But dads, we're not off the hook either. It's our job too. Final point this morning, I'd like to just take a little scan through the book of Proverbs. Let's go to the book of Proverbs. We're just going to breeze through this book, and I'm going to pull out a couple verses. And I know that I've at least mentioned this type of thing before in this pulpit, but I want to do it again because it relates to what we're speaking of this morning. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 8. Hear, my son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thine head and chains about thy neck. My daughter, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Go over to chapter 6 and verse 20. Some of you can recognize the context in the passage here. And I value highly some of the instruction that my mother gave me. Coming from a non-plain background, some of the things she taught me about morality and purity. Chapter 6 and verse 20, my son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thy heart, and tie them about thy neck. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 1. My son, forget not my law. This might be a father talking. It might be a mother talking. My son, my daughter, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thy heart. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 26. I know I mentioned this verse last Mother's Day a year ago, as I preached from this passage then, tried to. But I'd just like to call to our attention verse 26 of chapter 31. Talking about this virtuous woman, it says, she openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. The day-by-day teaching and praying a mother does from infancy and throughout the life of her children becomes the law of the mother. I've said before in this audience, and I say it again, by the time a child is 10 years old, they should at least have a pretty good understanding of what mom's law is. And as the young fellow goes in to buy some shirts, or as he goes out to buy a vehicle, he should have heard his father's instruction, but he ought to know what mom's law is about this. That thing that has been put in there from little one up, that it would guide him and her as she chooses dress material and shoes and whatever else. The law of the mother, the instruction of a father. But what is the law? Is there a law? Did the children know when that chain got tight on the neck? I went too far, I bucked it. Do they feel it? But all of that law governed by what we read there in Proverbs 31, the law of kindness. The law of mother with kindness. Many, many young people have gone far and wide into the world of wickedness and idolatry and adultery, if you please. But somehow, when it comes to the end of the rope, they know that they bucked against mom's chain that was tied there. They know it. They feel it. Oh, for mothers who hold forth the standard of righteousness and father whose instructions and commandments coincide for godly homes. I believe that Jochebed did both of these. I believe that she taught and prayed. And when Moses grew older, I believe he was keenly aware of what his mom taught him. I think he was keenly aware of it. To me, the law of the mother should be clearly understood even from a young age. And as age-appropriate instruction is given throughout adolescence and youth, it can be a chain of restraint and a guiding light in all of life. That's the way it should be. Just want to add one little thought to that, and this is not original with me. But if, God forbid, this happens, but if your child today, or mine, is going down a road that will take them to eternal destruction, the last barricade that they jump over before they go into eternal abyss should be the prayers of a godly mom and dad. That should be the last barricade to stop them. Are we praying for our children? Do they know the law that exists? Whether we're there or not, do they know what it is? Do they know where the line is? Is that law a law of kindness? It is my heart's desire that these thoughts can be an encouragement so that even in our generation, and as the Lord tarries, we may have godly mothers even in perilous time.